This is the Lunch Bunch with Andrew Hawthorne and Company on VOCM. For the next half hour, we will peek behind the big stories we are all talking about today. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your host of the Lunch Bunch, Andrew Hawthorne.
This is the Lunch Bunch, and I've got a Lunch Bunch hunch that we're going to have a really good time. My name's Andrew Hawthorne. I hope you're having a nice time. I hope you're not stuck on the highway. Half the highway is closed down, the TCH on the Southern Shore. We've got a lot of problems all over the place just with blowing snow all over the place. There's been a bunch of accidents, so be careful out there, folks, if you are. Here in the city, of course, the only accident that we've had is the House of Assembly. Everything is crashing, and we've been trying to figure out what to do there. Of course, the Premier announced his resignation earlier in the week, and everything has been scrambling since then. But one of the conversations that we've had a lot about that, in terms of who is in line to potentially replace the Premier as the leader of the Liberal Party in the province, potentially who we would want to be in that seat, and the kind of people that we want to be in that seat revolves, of course, around the question of women in politics. And I want to kind of blow that up to the question of who we want in politics and why, in terms of the diversity of thought that we would like to have solving these issues on the top. And to speak on that, I have former VOCM reporter and gender theorist here in the house with me, Zarin Healy-White. How are you doing, Zarin?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. So, you know, a lot of people immediately noted that the first few people that we that came forward, either because they had expressed interest before or because other people had put them forward, were all dudes. The issue of barriers for women entering politics is still one that is very present. And, you know, people will argue about that on social media, mm-hmm. but it is. It's mostly dudes over there. What is going on that, like, have we made any positive progress in this, do you think?
I think it's very complicated, and I think when you're looking at a leadership contest, it's a very different animal than even looking at a general election. What comes to mind for me, we have a huge barrier with getting enough women and gender diverse candidates in a general election, but at least for a general election, there is a larger team. You can put yourself out there for that public scrutiny, for those media interviews, and you have your fellow candidates. You have a party backing you. You have volunteer teams and headquarters and those sort of things. And I think for something like vying to be the leader of a party, that's a bit more of an isolating experience. And I think that when we look at those barriers that we know exist to be a woman candidate for any sort of election, they're going to be compounded for something like a leadership campaign. There's a lot of other things at stake, and you're going to be kind of putting yourself out there against your fellow people that would normally be the people that might be knocking on doors with you or going door to door or supporting you or donating to your campaign. Instead, you're inward, and you need to find those representatives from a party. So I think the barrier to entry only increases in that sort of instance. And those barriers are so multitude. People don't realize how expensive it is to run a campaign of any level. I think anyone that has run can speak to this more so than myself, but it is very cost prohibitive. No matter what kind of backing you may get from a party, everyone says that you have to be willing to put some of your personal finances into it, whether that's your personal fundraising, your own savings, or whether it's a loss of income through taking a leave of absence from work. These are really prohibitive.
We were speaking with Bernard Davis earlier in the week about this, and one of the first things that came up when he was asked if he was thinking about it, and he didn't confirm or deny if he was thinking about running for the leadership, but one of the first things he said was that he has to take a look at the financial situation, and not just in terms of how much it actually costs to run that kind of a campaign, but, you know, the kind of fees that you need to pay within the party or to the government. Like, there's a lot of different levels. And so when we talk about the kind of diversity of thought that we want at the top, poverty is one of those things that is a barrier, or money. It doesn't even have to talk about people who are dealing with real poverty in real situations. But just because money is a barrier to entry in a certain way, and that's unfortunate because, you know, not just like this isn't about filling a quota that we need a certain number of people in various, you know, we need a certain number of middle class people, and we need a certain, like, what we want is people who have had a breadth of experience that can bring that experience, and sometimes that experience is dealing with poverty and dealing with tight times, dealing with a budget, and putting that in the house, and that's a barrier to those people.
We should want a House of Assembly of 40 people that truly reflect the electorate. And if we continue to sort of ascribe a sense of belief and faith in people that are wealthy, who are wealthy intergenerationally because they're part of a business dynasty or a political dynasty. We're going to continue getting people that are, that walk into wanting to be our representatives who don't really represent the average person. I think there's a role for a lot of different types of people, but it really does baffle me why we've over time come to trust rich people more with making decisions about our province. I find that to be at the crux of so many major interlayered problems that we have in Newfoundland and Labrador.
That's a fascinating question. And, you know, like, I don't want this to seem like this is an eat the rich program. It could be, but it's not just that, you know, because obviously people with business experience, successful business people, or people who are wealthy and who are used to dealing with a large amount of wealth, have a useful amount of experience to bring to the House of Assembly as well. But I wonder how much of this isn't due somehow in part to the Americanization of the way we think about media. You know, the American dream, if it were, as it were, is if you work really hard, then you will become rich, you will become successful. The caveat of that, as we've seen in American public discourse, is if you are rich, you must have worked hard and earned it. So, somehow, you know, the inverse of that is a little more dangerous than the original just work hard and you will be rewarded thing. And so it seems to feel like if somebody comes up and they're like, well, I'm a billionaire, not that we've got a lot of those floating around here in the province, then, you know, as we saw with Bloomberg on the American debates there, there seems to be some kind of gravitas conferred to that may or may not be warranted, depending on who you're talking to.
And the stakes for running are so much lower for someone who has a lot to go back to. And I think that's why we see so many retired people. We see so many people in later stages of their career running for politics. And we see so many men because they may have different financial situations that allow them to take that risk. And I think risk is the key element here. Think about the risk for a woman to put herself out there and run. First of all, what job does she have that she can leave for, you know, a 4 to 6 week campaign, that she can step away from that, use her vacation, take a leave of absence, a role that is, it's actually possible for her employer to support that. What about her other responsibilities around childcare? And the fact that we don't have affordable child care in this province, the fact that we have the second lowest minimum wage in the country. Think about all these things. The stakes are so much higher for women. They risk so much by putting themselves out there.
And these are still traditional roles that are being conferred on women in our modern society a lot of the time.
Exactly. Even everyone's individual situation is a bit different, and there may or may not be that typical second shift we used to talk about. But we still know that there are more barriers for women. If you're a young woman, you're thinking of you know, starting a family, there are practical implications around that, around missed work, around needing a job that you can safely and securely come back to, around figuring out what you're going to do. And you have to put a lot of that aside if you want to run. And we just don't teach women from a young age, and we don't teach people that aren't cisgender men from a young age that they can be that person. We still have the idea, if you close your eyes, you picture a politician, you're probably still, even those of us who are progressive, we're picturing maybe someone in a suit, maybe someone who's white with grayer white hair. We're probably picturing a man. And that's a big barrier to overcome, because there's so many studies that show that when a woman sees a job ad, she thinks, ooh, I need to have every single thing on that application. I need every single credential, and I need so much experience before I should even put myself out there and apply. Take that research and map it onto politics, and we see the same phenomenon.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to continue this discussion about the diversity in the House and how we can try to increase that with Zirin Healy-White. Stay tuned, folks.
Now back to Andrew Hawthorne and the Lunch Bunch on VOCM.
We're back. I've got Zirin Healy-White here in the studio. Not for the first time. We're old colleagues here at VO. Do you ever miss it, the glamorous radio life, Zirin?
I do. It's amazing when you are used to being on live radio every day, as I was for, I guess, 3 years that I was here. It becomes very second nature, and you don't feel that quickened pulse of being behind the microphone, and I felt nervous today, so it's exciting.
Yeah, I live my life a quarter mile at a time, you know, and it's a breakneck pace. So, Zirin, just cutting through everything that we've been talking about, are you going to announce that you're running for premier?
No, but I do remember at one time moderating the VOCM web comments that someone did suggest that I should, and you know what? It meant a lot to me, Al commentator. But, I mean, I think we should ask women more if they're going to run. And we need to say that, because most women I've spoken to who say, someone approached me, doesn't matter what party, doesn't matter if it was municipal, federal, provincial, and they said, I think you should run for office, that changes something in a person to know that someone feels that way. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately. There are many men who don't really have trouble looking in the mirror and seeing a candidate, a member of the House of Assembly, a city councilor, maybe even premier, maybe leader of a party. They can see that. And I personally challenge every man who so easily can come to that conclusion because of the things they were taught growing up, to instead of looking in the mirror and seeing that potential candidate that comes so easily to them, for them to turn and find at least five women in their life who they think could do the same and do some tangible, concrete things to help them see themselves that way. That's sort of what's next. We know women are pivotal in politics. I know firsthand how many women work behind the scenes, are advisors, are strategists, are fundraisers, are organizers, are activists. They're there. But we can't just accept women continuing to be in the servant role of those who get elected, because that is common. We need women to run. So I challenge anyone out there who cares about who represents us to donate some money to a female candidate, to donate some time, or to at the very least donate some of that support and that energy, or maybe all three.
We had Mallory Fisher in here from Artistic Fraud yesterday. We were talking a bit about these issues. And we got into the nature of patriarchy. And I want to bring this up because these are all words that are very incendiary in a way. And you know, people who agree with with feminism as a concept and a lot of this stuff are already going to be on board. And people who haven't figured a lot of that stuff out or disagree with these things are going to say, like, oh, you know, this is all against men and things like that. But a lot of what you're talking about isn't like there's a secret cabal of men trying to keep women out of these places. It's that there is a certain amount of programming done through culture that is in women's heads as much or more than men's heads, looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing or not seeing premiership potential.
Absolutely. It really is. And I think it's really tough for politics because so much of it is independent. It's a lonely gig, no matter if you're an independent or part of a party or part of with a, you know, a huge groundswell of support. I think there's, at the end of the day, the person has to want to do it, and they need to feel that they can, and they need to feel that they're going to be supported. And I think that's a little bit harder for women, for the economic reasons we've talked about, for the possible loss of income, for the social scrutiny. Politicians are endlessly scrutinized, and social media obviously has had an impact on that. And we do still see, even in 2020, that the discourse is different around women than men in terms of their demeanor, in terms of their appearance, how they are aging in the public spotlight, what they wear, how, you know, the tone of their voice. There's all these different things. I think that's hard. It's hard for everyone. It's that little bit much harder for women. And it's there's all these barriers to overcome, and we need to help people. You know, we know that there's lots of men that say, oh, yes, we would love to have an equal number of women candidates on our team or running in an election, but we need to see the action on that. It's not just a sentiment. It can't just be women are welcome. There has to be more than that.
Let's talk about the action. How do we alter course here to encourage more women? And great steps have been taken. You know, like a lot of these steps are already in motion. We've had Equal Voice working on this and inspiring women to take those roles, and we've seen the results municipally here. You know, we went from absolutely zero women to quite a few in City Hall here in St. John's, and a lot of people have been on social media saying that even that fact has inspired them. How do we continue that ball rolling to see a more representation in the House that looks more like our population?
Well, we definitely need to get there. And the municipal election in St. John's and other municipal elections around the province were really important for that. We know that when we can give girls and women and anyone who's not a cisgender male, we can give them people that they can relate to and they can see themselves reaching that goal. That makes a huge difference. But we do need to take it a step beyond simply encouragement and that level of advocacy. When I think, for instance, around something like a leadership contest, if the maximum spending that a a leader, a potential leader can spend is a lower number that's more accessible and inclusive. If it's a really high number, you know, you can spend $50,000 on your leadership campaign, then, well, that's, you know, there's not going to be we're not going to get a lot of people who can compete with that. So, and that's not just about gender, but also people of different economic backgrounds. So looking at some of the rules that we apply to some of these contests can really help level the playing field a little bit. That is certainly one way. But we need to make it actually possible for women by doing active things to support them through fundraising. One thing that on a party structure, so a little bit different than municipal, but if there's a party structure, they can really strive to have gender parity on in their candidates and to actually make sure that they're reaching out and doing that candidate recruitment. And that's a really big piece of it. Candidate recruitment, we know, is huge. It's not just that you get maybe 40 people who just wake up in the middle of the night with an epiphany that they're going to run for office. It doesn't happen that way. It has to be, you have to reach out to people. You need to encourage them. You need to sort of build on that and show them what you're going to be able to help them with and show them why they should run, why they have something that's going to contribute. And that's really the only way that we're going to see a meaningful difference long term. I know we pat ourselves on the back every time we get another woman in the House, and so that's a wonderful thing. But I mean, I can't imagine if we had more women than men. That just feels so far away to me still. It still feels so far away that it could ever tip that way. And I think we need to keep heading there.
It's difficult to imagine. And I can't emphasize enough, like, the conversation that we're having is beneficial to everybody to do. Like critics will come on and say that this is about filling a quota or something, and that's not what they want to see. But the fact of the matter is, if you read any reports on management or team building or any of that stuff, it doesn't even have to be politics. What you want to do is build a team with a vast diversity of backgrounds. Otherwise, if you have an entire team of the same person, they're all going to come to the same conclusion and have the same idea. You want a lot of different solutions, and especially we need a lot of different solutions right now to these problems. If you have like five carpenters with a specialty in nails, everything is going to be a hammer and a nail situation.
That's exactly right. And we know that we need women in there because women are going to have different perspectives. We need people of all kinds of different backgrounds. We don't want the same type of person spending our money and making decisions and making policy decisions and saying we can't do this or we can't do that and these are the priorities. You're going to get different priorities, and those priorities need to be diverse. And we should have people, we should have, you know, ideally kind of 40 different people who all are coming at it from a different lens through different backgrounds with gender, belonging to different groups, having different backgrounds that aren't just the same upper middle class white person that, you know, had a lot of privileges that were unearned that allowed them to see themselves as a potential politician and made them feel that they deserve to be there. And that's part of the problem too. So I just can't imagine where our province would be if we were a little bit further along with realizing that if we put different people in there, we're going to get different proposals, different solutions. It's going to be a completely different house and a completely different province for all the people that live here.
Just imagine. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to solve all the province's problems and fix every complaint you've ever had with the House of Assembly. It's true. Just stay tuned.
Now back to Andrew Hawthorne and the Lunch Bunch on VOCM.
We're back. I'm speaking about Zarin Healy-White to you. And here she is. Hi, Zarin.
Hi.
Sorry, I get hung up on my intro sometimes, and everything is very confusing. We've been talking about gender and diversity in the House, and I wanted to blow it up for a moment because we've been talking a lot about getting women interested in running for politics, running for the premiership, which is now going to be up for grabs, leadership of the Liberal Party, etc. There's a lot of insiders and outsiders that have been put forward for that. But of course, women aren't the only ones being underrepresented in the House. We have visible minorities and other here in St. John's and in Newfoundland and Labrador, of course. We have indigenous communities. We have people with different levels of ability that have a vast array of experience that they can bring. How do we blow open the House? How do we do this?
I like the way you put it, insiders and outsiders. I think that really encapsulates a lot of what the problem is. And we can sort of feign inclusivity as an electorate, as people, different people that are working in politics in some way, but we have to actually figure out what that actually looks like, and it has to get beyond diversity for diversity's sake. It is not because we want, you know, X party or group wants to look good. It can't be about that. We have to try to put people in there because their voices deserve to be heard, because they represent a group of people, because they can speak to issues that matter to people. You know, the economic diversity for me is a big one, because I observe in this province, we touched on it earlier, a real sort of inherent implicit trust in wealthy people, in business owners, and people that when you sort of defamiliarize it, they've gotten rich and successful through maybe
It could be fine.
It could be questionable. Maybe it's paying people minimum wage, and that's how they've gotten rich. Maybe they need to look at their business practices. It's capitalism. And is that the only way to get yourself enough of a profile that you could be in an office? I hope not.
But it's also the same kind of person. You know, if the barrier to entry for politics is not a business as much as we want, you know, the power in you know, a business cannot legislate something to happen regardless of money, and a province doesn't just have money to use as a societal influence. So those are two very different skill sets, and they're useful. It's valuable to have people with business experience, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But that's not the only one. I brought up various levels of ability earlier, and I wanted to recount a story. I know we only got a minute left. When I was talking to some people from Cottonelle about disability, and I wish I could remember her name, but it was a woman in a wheelchair, and she had a job and said, you know, I can't get into the building. We need to build a ramp. They built her a ramp for accessibility, but it was on such a high angle, she couldn't use it, and she couldn't make them understand this. You know, they're like, oh, it's accessible now, until she literally had to get somebody to sit in a wheelchair and try to push themselves up this ramp. And nobody trying for, you know, with all good intentions, would have understood that without the lived experience of being in a wheelchair every day. And this is the kind of experience we need in the house, not just in terms of personal living experience, but career experience and life experience here in the province. Sarah, we've only got a minute left. In short, solve everything. what is the bullet points of getting more women in politics?
Well,
here?
Like I said earlier, I challenge everyone out there, no matter what your background or gender, to encourage women to run. Encourage people that don't look like the normative politician to run, people of different backgrounds, all kinds of different lived experience, different socioeconomic class backgrounds. And any man thinking about running, please encourage at least another woman to run with you as well. Let's lift each other up, and we've got to help women see themselves as the political future of this province.
Which they are. Zarin Healy-White, thank you very much for being on. That has been your Lunch Bunch for today.